Coming to you live from Browns headquarters in Berea, Ohio, this is Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome to the final Cleveland Browns Daily of 2015. Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm will be joined by the kid in the second hour to do our picks. It's Coordinator Thursday. There he is walking by our studio. We'll hear from him later today, the offensive coordinator of the Cleveland Browns, John DeFilippo. We'll also hear from defensive coordinator Jim O'Neill. And at some point today, we're going to hear some comments from the head coach of the Cleveland Browns, Mike Pettine. Had some very interesting things to say about his staff and what he knows he would have to do if he stays here. We will get those for you as well. Our Ohio Business Machine hot topic of the day has to do with concussions. And we heard what Gerard Cherry had to say yesterday on this station about concussions and players needing to play through concussions and not self-reporting concussions, basically. And you know,
I agree with that.
It's a different world, though.
It's a different world.
I think these guys, your career is so short, and what you put yourself through is going to last for the rest of your life, that if you put yourself in the way of more psychological damage to your brain, then I have no problem with these guys saying they have concussions. I think this is it's a serious issue. It's obviously a serious issue for the National Football League, and if you've got a concussion, I don't mind these guys saying. I think it's a different era than when you played or Gerard played, and I think it's a little bit of a different mentality, but it's also one that's being mandated by the league, not so much just these guys being, you know, soft.
I'm not trying to say that anybody's soft, and I didn't hear Gerard's comments, but I understand Gerard's stance on this, and it's close to mine. I'm not saying anyone's soft, because the game of football is still the game of football, and I think what has happened over the last 5 to 7 years is all the analytics and all the stories and the number of lives that we've lost because of concussions or concussion-like symptoms. Junior Seau was a guy, you know, that I considered, you know, not a close friend, but a friend and a mentor at some points, and lost his life because of his battle with CTE associated with the trauma to his brain from playing the game of football. And the stories that have now come out with, you know, Jim Trotter, another local media guy there in San Diego that covered the Chargers for very many years, that befriended Junior Seau as well, was still covering the team when I was there, and the book that he kind of co-wrote in honor of Junior Seau and his life. And it's tough. The one thing for me is, and I walked you through this scenario kind of before we jumped on the air yesterday, knowing that Johnny Manziel walked into the building yesterday and said,
"Sure,
I have a sensitivity to light. I have headaches. I'm nauseous. I'm vomiting." Whatever those concussion symptoms were, and I even explained it to you, is I would go about my day and do my best to struggle through a practice, knowing, especially as a quarterback, that I wouldn't necessarily have any trauma to my head that would take my current status or symptoms to an entirely another level that would hinder me from essentially living, you know, of not wanting to get out of my bed. It would take a trainer, a doctor, a coach, or a teammate to see those symptoms in me, in their association with me prior to going to the practice field. Otherwise, I would struggle through them and go out and give my best effort in practice unless I felt like I was holding back the team because I was that out of it on the field.
Let me ask you this. If once you become educated, as these players in this generation certainly are, about the second impact syndrome, which is getting a concussion while concussed, and how dangerous that can be and how it has significantly more long-term effects than just having one concussion, is that something you still would, you know, if you knew, you know, if you had all the knowledge, that's something you still would go through? Like, if you knew you were putting yourself and your mental health at significant long-term risk by trying to play through a concussion?
Yeah. I personally would. And I think the one kind of case, every concussion
on,
is case by case.
Let's say you're on the Browns and you're 3 and 12, and this game doesn't matter.
I could understand why someone would do it.
Would play. Would or would not.
Because if I were a pending free agent, and that's guys that, you know, don't go 100% because they don't want to pull a hammy, blow a quad, you know, get an ACL as they're about to get their second largest payday, or they're probably their largest payday ever in their life, going into free agency. That I can understand. And I know there's a lot of negative connotations and rumors swirling about Johnny Manziel with why are the videos being posted? Does he want to be out of Cleveland? And maybe that mentality, could that mentality have crept into his mind of what am I really playing for? I can go in and say this, you know, get thrown in the protocol and know that I don't have to play again and get this over with. I could see that. And I could see, for me, I'd have to personally be in that situation. And what sometimes is very tough for these young men, because I could see if I were at the end of my career with a wife and kids, and that were to happen, and the season was lost, I may want to play, but my wife would make me aware, wife, girlfriend, fiance, whatever you want to call it, would make me aware of the risks and what I could possibly lose by going out and playing and being that tough guy. Now, when you're a single guy, you have no one to bounce those things off of, uh-huh, other than other guy friends, other teammates, and, you know, and in some cases, you don't want to look, and that's the one perception that a lot of people have. You don't ever want to look weak as a professional athlete, especially a professional football player.
Do you think that's changing, though?
It is changing. It is changing, and I think that there are certain players in the National Football League now that are changing that. You know, with the off-the-field branding and so on and so forth, and having to always be that, you know, machismo meathead because of what guys are doing both in the game of football with their foundations, with current businesses, and then, of course, the guys that transition out of the game very well into analysts or entrepreneurs and so on and so forth, you know, money managers, and are very successful as well.
Yeah, and, you know, Gerard's quote was, quote, if you're serious about winning, you better play through some concussions. And I just think that that's a mentality that certainly was prevalent, and I get it. As a former player, you feel the same way, I think, in a lot of respects. I don't know if you'd go that blanket with it, but certainly.
No, and I won't go so blanket as this, but understanding Gerard's career, he's older than me as a player, and so he's in a slightly different era as well, and having played for Bill Belichick, he's wired even differently than the way I'm wired because he was a part of the Patriot way for most of his career. But if you look at Gerard's career was a lot like mine. We're predominantly special teams players. You know, I started, you know, 25, 30 games in the National Football League. So I had to fight to make the team almost every year. I was a bottom 25% guy for 6 out of my 7 or 8 years in the National Football League.
Yeah.
So missing a practice or practices or potentially missing a game can create a perception about you. When you get expensive when you get old because of the minimum salary that they have to give you, they have to give you the you're fully vested, they have to match your 401k, they have to give you the full life insurance, you know, the health insurance. You get expensive. I mean, your number is significantly larger than just what the minimum salary is. As a team looks at you, they're looking at you as an investment as well. And kind of why I kind of hung up the cleats when I did is because, do I really want to go fight, you know, to make this team and potentially, you know, grind all offseason and go through training camp and then on, you know, August 31st or September 1st, that $300,000 shot in the dark undrafted free agent that, you know, is cheaper and younger and slightly faster that they can mold.
Right. He could give them 80% of you for 33% of the price.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. That's what,
and I think that's why the NFL is trying to take it out of the hands of players, because it's interesting. At 1-1 level, you know, you have that mentality that you want to go ahead and try to keep, you know, your job, and you want to show that you are tough, and you can count on me, and I'm going to play through anything for you, coach, blah, blah, blah. At the other point, the organization, in many ways, or many football organizations, just the nature of the business is players are the commodities on some level,
yes,
and they're happy to churn you out and move on. And so you've got to protect at the same time your financial well-being and try to maximize your earning potential and your value in the league. But at the same time, you have to preserve your health and well-being for when you leave the game so that you have another opportunity and outlet to make money, which is why I like that the league is trying to take it out of the players and teams' hands.
Right, and I agree with that. And it's in some cases it's been a process, but you'd be surprised, Nathan, the number of guys who don't care about their health, who they don't think. As I'll say, in my era of football, you don't think about your health and the deterioration of your body after your career when you're in the midst of your career. You are thinking about maximizing the amount of money you can make because you're aware that you have an 8 to 12 year window, for some guys, a 3 to 15 year window to make a majority of the money that you'll make in your life.
Yeah.
Playing in the National Football League. So you're not concerned about, well, what am I going to be 30 years from now? Now those conversations are being had by players in the National Football League. Now I have those conversations, but I didn't have those conversations when I was in it. I didn't care. You don't, right. You don't. I mean, and it's part of the education process. The education process for them, you know, currently is significantly different than the conversations and the NFLPA meetings that I was sitting in on. Mine were all about the growth of the league and the revenue and what we're going to do to make you guys more money and the collective bargaining agreements. And now the conversations are minutely about money, and they're all about rule change and concussions and life after football and the education process and what assets are available to you when your career is done.
Absolutely, and I think that is why, you know, you're seeing this. And even Gerard's comments made it all the way to Awful Announcing. And they wrote a long article about it saying that his comments show how many people still think their basic tenor was, while it is a dangerous opinion and it's troubling opinion, as a former player and what he went through, they say it's an understandable opinion. They don't love that, you know, the ESPN Cleveland promoted it and right. wants it out there, but it's the fact that it got there. It's obviously something people want to be talking about. And I just think it's a good thing that in many cases, you know, I think people are looking at it because Johnny came in and reported it or that, you know, then it's on him. But I think it's good that the NFL is trying to take these things out of the hands of the players and look out for their safety, because ultimately it's looking out for the longevity of the league too.
It definitely is. And here's another perspective though. And Marlon Moore, when we spent time with him at Discount Drug Mart, when Marlon Moore, who was playing as our third wide receiver at some point because I think Gabriel was out, Hawk got a concussion in that game, and he was lining up, got jacked in the ribs, right?
Yep.
And giving his all to this football team. And what was the resounding message to him as he walked off the field?
Yeah, ugly stuff from fans.
Ugly stuff from the fans. So that's the perspective that I give. When a guy gets concussion, you know, and you're saying, you know, the media and the league and the emphasis they're putting on concussion, and it's great that the players are bringing that to the table, and it's a whole level of education. The education is not only for the players. You have to protect your product, but the education has to be with your fans, because I think 30% of the fans are going to go, oh, it's so good. You know, he's got one career. You only have one life to live. But the sad part is the other 70%, the majority, looks at you as weak. Get another guy in there. I don't want him if he can't play through this, if he can't play through that. He can't sacrifice for me. He can't sacrifice for the team. I spent my hard-earned money to watch you play, and you can't even be out there?
And I wonder if on some level, because people are like, well, why would the NFL let them advertise the concussion movie before, you know, during NFL games? Why is it, and hasn't there been the backlash from the league about it? NFL obviously worked with them on it. And I think in some ways, I think that they're hoping the concussion movie does some educating amongst the fans. And
I think so too.
There is a responsibility, I think, amongst the media to help with that education and former players to help spread that message. Say, look, this is how I did it. This is what we did. But we know that now we know, and this is why these guys are being smart, and this is why these guys are doing the right thing. This is why the league's doing the right thing. I think in some ways it might have been from the league saying, all right, now that 70%, you come see this concussion movie and you'll say, oh, I'll think about this differently, and know that the league is trying to preserve the game that I love as a fan and these players so that they can all go through it and this game can still be here for the
exactly.
fans.
Exactly. But the whole point is the same way that Gerard's comments came from an era of football. So it's all about the different eras of football. And as we take, you know, callers each and every day, what genre, what era of football are our listeners? There's not many that are between 21 and 35. They're all 40 to 75, sharing their stories about the game that they love, the teams that they love, the players that they love, the plays that are near and dear to their heart, and what those players, the toughness they exuded, what they overcame, the little bit amount of money that they made way back then. and they're trying to understand the rationalize with you're getting paid millions of dollars and you've got a bum finger, a bump on the head, which they're now considering a concussion, and you can't walk out there when my guys, the Clay Matthews and the Bernie Kosars and the Kevin Max and the Jim Browns used
they
to go out there
uphill both directions
in the snow, yep. Both ways. Yeah, all that stuff. So it's, I think a lot, to your point, a lot of the education has to do with the fans, because we create the players are the product, but your fans are monetize this game to make it the juggernaut that it is.
Absolutely. All right. When we come back on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford, we'll open up the phone lines. What do you think about this concussion issue? We can talk college football playoff. Obviously, we'll get your take on the Buckeyes and Notre Dame tomorrow. Mr. Wilhelm.
I got my text out. I just got my text back from Mark Snyder, linebacker coach for the Michigan State Spartans, as well as Mark D'Antonio, not Mike D'Antonio.
Yes.
Can you believe that Sports Illustrated screwed that up? So I've got my good lucks up.
I'm
representing the Big Ten big time, so go Sparty.
Go Sparty. Is that hard for you to say? Like,
not at all.
What if those guys, those same coaches, had gone from Ohio State to Michigan? Would you be able to say the same thing?
No.
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 Okay. Interesting.
Go blow.
Just want to know. All right. When we come back, your phone calls, 216-578-0850, Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. Nathan's girl, Matt Wilhelm, here on the final show of 2015. Let's go to the phone lines now. We've got Kenny in Canton. Kenny, welcome to the show.
Hey.
What's up, man?
What's up, man?
Hey, this was Tony, but...
Tony,
hey,
what up?
Tony, sorry.
Hey, no, it's fine. How are you guys doing today?
Good, how
good,
are
man.
You?
Happy New Year.
Hey, happy New Year to you gentlemen as well. I love your show. I listen to you every day while I'm in my office, so... But,
appreciate that.
Definitely. I want to discuss Manziel and his little concussion issue. I'm a United States Marine, served 2 combat tours in Iraq.
Well, thank you for that.
Yes, thank you.
Hey, anytime, gentlemen. I'm glad that you took the time to say thank you. I've had concussions. I've been hit in the head by, guys that tried to detain IED blasts. If you thought for 1 second that I wasn't going to be out there with my boys exiting the lines to go take out some dudes, okay, you're mistaken. I don't care what it is. I'm going out there for my boys. He is not a leader. That dude don't know what it's like to go out there for his boys, ride or die, okay? He's faking it. He's looking to go to Dallas. He don't care about the Steelers versus Browns, okay? If he cared, he'd go out there puking. That's all I got for you, gents.
Appreciate the call, and again, thank you for your service. I don't know. It seems to me it's just a different. I don't know. It's a different. It's not. It's a little bit of a different scenario, I think, for football versus what Tony was doing for our great country out there. And I don't know what to, I don't know what. I don't think Johnny Manziel is faking it. That is hard for me to get my head around to think that he's faking it.
Yeah, it's a stretch, and I think it takes a sick individual to have the life and the career that so many other millions of people wish they could have. And in a moment when Johnny Manziel, all he's been asking for is an opportunity to start for this franchise, and he's starting for this franchise and does this against the Steelers, week 17, playing the potential role of spoiler, he could catapult himself in such an amazing direction if he goes out there and plays well and wins this game.
Yeah, and I think that's pretty part of, the Johnny football mystique if he goes ahead and gets it done. Let's go to our guy Stan in Brooklyn now. Stan, welcome to the show.
Gentlemen, Happy New Year.
Happy
everybody.
New Year, Stan.
I just want to give a shout-out to Kevin Griffin again. He sent me a very nice get-well card in the mail.
Excellent.
Thank you, Kevin. I hope you're there in 2016 and moving forward. And all you gentlemen there, you need long-term contracts, more money.
Thank you. We appreciate that.
You know that.
You could be our agent.
But anyways, these people that call in and think that Johnny's making this up, number one, he's either going to Cleveland Clinic or University Hospitals to get evaluated. There's a team, they're called a team of clinical neurologists. that look at this scenario and this situation. I have utmost respect for anybody that served in the military. I know where he's coming from, but this is completely different. Johnny's just following the protocol that was laid down by the collective bargaining process, the NFL, the owners.
But Stan, has Johnny been the one that follows, you know, the orders and rules to the utmost degree on anything else in life?
No, but when it comes to this situation, I don't really think that he's deliberately trying. I'm just telling you, I'm stating the facts about this clinical team of neurologists.
Yeah,
and it's
a little bit different than common.
You know, I've been there. I have a clinical team of cardiologists. These people are experts. They got PhDs.
Yep.
They're way over our head, you know?
That's right. We're like ropes off the Goodyear blimp.
Yeah, you're right. But anyways, I hope to continue listening to you. And again, Kevin, thank you. And KNR, thank you. Bye.
Thank you, Stan. Happy New Year to you. Let's go to Kevin in Mansfield now. Kevin, welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. Thanks. Love the show. Matt, I was getting in an argument with one of my buddies the other day, and we were talking about when you were playing college, did you ever get flagged for choking? Like a guy was on the ground. I just remember a linebacker.
It was Robert Reynolds the year after in 2003.
Okay.
It was Jim Sorgi of the Wisconsin Badgers.
Jim Sorgi?
Yeah. I thought it was you and my buddy.
I would never do something like that.
All right.
You're not dastardly.
Not choking. I mean, I'd punch somebody. Watch the national championship game again. I threw plenty of elbows and shots to the face after the play.
A few shivers.
Hey,
oh, yes.
One more thing. Manziel, he's a manipulator. He's manipulating things. I don't know if there's a black and white diagnosis for concussion, but, you know, I think he's faking.
I appreciate the call. Thank you very much. I will say this for Johnny. It seems like he certainly has lost the PR battle because do you hear this about anybody else? Does anybody think Tremont Williams is faking his concussion? You know, it's same exact scenario happened with Tremont Williams. And in Tremont Williams, and I just saw him in the cafe, and he seems to be doing well, which is good news there. But, you know, that's a guy who's a veteran who's getting paid, who doesn't need to go out there. And you know, it just seems to me Johnny Manziel is a guy who still has so much to accomplish and do that I don't know. It's just interesting from my standpoint where I sit that so many people, it never entered my mind. Never occurred to me that he was faking it. I mean, if you go back and watch that Kansas City game, that's a guy who gave you everything he had. It didn't necessarily generate the result that he wanted or the Browns fans wanted, but he gave you everything he had out there. He took punishment that he didn't have to have, and then at the end of the game, he was so frustrated he slammed his helmet down because he wanted to win so bad. He's a competitor. That's one thing that I thought shined through more than anything in that game. So to get the notion that he wants to take himself out of a competitive environment when it's his last chance to do so against the Steelers.
Yeah,
I just don't see it.
I don't see it either, but I'm always one to listen to perspectives, you know, outside perspectives. So I can understand where people are coming from, but I think after you laid it out the way you did and everything that – all the credibility that he could lose if this is potentially true for him at this, you know, immature state in his career would be – debilitating.
Yeah, people really just think it. All right, let's go to POD in Parma. Pod. He dropped. All right, let's go to Rocky in Virginia. Rocky.
Hey, guys. What's going on? Thanks for taking my call.
You got it, man.
What I want to... Oh, yeah, and Happy New Year to everybody.
Happy New Year to you, too.
Nice, appreciate it. All I want to do is cover, again, I just think we really need to move on. It's just been too many issue after issue for a guy that's been mediocre, to say the least. The city has tried to get behind this guy time and time again. He said something and done something else. I mean, it's just come to a time and point where we need to move on and really focus on somebody else. I mean, he can't see over the line. He can't throw in bad weather. His arm. Does he have a drinking problem? Yada, yada, yada. This is too much drama for your quarterback to have, especially if he's to be considered a franchise quarterback. You know, we're in disarray. I don't know if he's really hurt or not. Regardless of the case, it's another issue at the end of the season regarding this guy, and he's not going to be playing. And, you know, it's just I think it's time to do something else. We need a big, strong guy I don't know where we're going to get there, who it may be, but I don't think Johnny's the guy. He's made improvements based on a dumpster fire of the season last year, but it gets to a point where, you know, okay, enough is enough. We've seen enough. We're making excuses for him. You know, any other time, you know, if this was something else or somebody else, we would be moving on. So I think it's time for us to do that with him also. So thanks,
all right,
guys, for
the call. Appreciate the call. The way I see it, this guy just was out there competing, and he got a concussion. I mean, it happened. Luke Kuechly missed time this year with a concussion. It happens. It's, I guess, you know, and somebody made a point right now that I'd give him the benefit of the doubt if he hadn't set the precedent for being dishonest.
Of course.
And I get that. I get that, G.I. George. So it's one of those things, very, very interesting, and certainly one of those situations that is, I think that he is being – I think he's got a concussion. I think that's just, it's just that simple. Let's go to Scott in Ridgeville. Scott, welcome.
Hi, guys.
How you doing?
Very excellent show. I really enjoy it.
Thank you.
What about his elbow? I mean, he threw very well against Frisco. Then he threw horrible. I know it was windy, but even the shorter stuff. And hasn't he always had, like, a problem with his elbow?
Yeah, that's not
it. He can't do two games in a row.
No, that's not an issue. That's not an issue. The 49ers game... He played what? He came. It was bench, and then it was the, was it the 49ers game after Cincinnati? That was his first start back. They won. He played against Seattle. I didn't think he played poorly. So
no, that was pretty good.
Yeah, I think it's a combination of tough. I just think it's a concussion. The elbow, from what I've been told, has not been an issue. He has taken every single rep in practice, and if it was an issue, that would not be the case. So. I don't think the elbow has been an issue. That was something that I think was made a big deal about early in the offseason. I remember that when he missed some time early.
Yeah.
But I don't think it has ended up being an issue for Johnny Manziel at all this season. Appreciate the phone call.
Hey.
Let's go to Jeremy in Mansfield now. Jeremy, welcome to the show.
Hey, how you doing, man? Good. Happy New Year to guys.
Happy New Year to you, too.
I was just wondering, I was thinking, man, if he gets in there like he did and showed all that fire last game and threw his helmet down. I just think there's no way all these people saying, you know, about him faking it or them faking it for reasons is a good way to put it, because I honestly think, man, he wants to be in there a whole lot. He just got that Joe Namath part of him that won't stop. He wants to party, and do everything and still play football. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't see, and I just don't, it doesn't make sense to me just from what you know about him as a competitor. I just don't see that faking it is what's going on here. I don't buy that with Johnny Manziel. I think he is, as we've said, a total competitor who wants nothing more than to be out there with his team and going against Seattle, or going against Pittsburgh Steelers, I'm sorry, this weekend at First Energy Stadium. So that's where I'm at on that. At this point, you couldn't convince me unless somebody had actual evidence that he was faking it. I just don't buy the he's faking it part of this argument.
I think there's so few stories about individuals doing this in pro, you know, especially at the highest level in professional sports, that with the spotlight that's on him to do something this bold is on an entirely another level.
Yeah, I just don't see it. Sean in his car doesn't see it either. Sean, welcome to the show.
How's it going, guys?
Good. How are you?
Good. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Yeah, I mean, I know it's hard to believe for some of these people that one of our quarterbacks might get a concussion behind our all-star offensive line. It's ridiculous. I mean, the guy, I was watching the game like I watch all of the games, and there was two times, I can't remember what quarter it was, where the one lineman, I think it was when he ran for like the 23-yard gain, and he just got crushed on the sideline. Looked like his head bounced off the turf.
Right.
He got up, and the announcer said, oh, he might be winded or something. I'm like, well, he looks more than winded. And, you know, like you guys say, he's a competitor. And it's just this ridiculous speculation and conspiracy theories or whatever. Like, why would he fake it? I mean, why?
Right. There's nothing to be gained if you're Johnny Manziel from faking it. For the people who think he wants to get out of town, the best thing he could do is play well and get somebody to really want to pony up for him. So, yeah, it doesn't make sense to me. Let's get two more, and then we'll take our break, and we'll hear from the defensive coordinator of the Cleveland Browns, Jim O'Neill. Rob in Kentucky, and then we'll get to Mike in Bedford. Rob, welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking the call.
Got it,
hope everybody has a Happy New Year and everything.
You as well.
Well, thank you. Thank you. So I just kind of want to – I don't really think he is faking this because I'm assuming – I don't know this for a fact, but I'm assuming that if a player has concussion-like symptoms, I'm assuming as soon as those symptoms are noticed or brought up by the player – that they are immediately looked at by somebody,
yeah,
medical
tested,
personnel.
And then he's got a right. You, then you take the test. And Matt, you've told me, we've talked about this on the air, off the air, it's not something that you can fake. Like, you can't fake to make it look like you have one, or to try, you know, or fake to make it look like you don't.
No, no. The only thing that you could potentially do is after you are essentially in the protocol, taking those baseline tests, you can fly through them. You can, you know, essentially, you know, circle C for every answer or something like that, and stay in the protocol, you know, within a certain reason before the system catches up to you.
Okay.
But yeah, faking, yeah, you can't fake nausea and vomiting. You can't fake sensitive to light to the point where you can't, like, open your eyes in a room with lights on. You can't fake a pounding headache that, like, feels like a jackhammer is going off in your head.
Right. You certainly cannot. All right. Mike in Bedford has an interesting take. Mike, go ahead, my friend.
Hey, what's up, fellas? How you doing, man? Happy holidays, happy new year, like, all that good stuff.
Same to you.
I know this take might be ignorant because I don't know, you know what I mean? But my thing was, you know, before the bye week when you guys had Johnny on and he said, you know, he told Patton that he would be, you know, on his best behavior in the video service, then he got benched or demoted. And now I'm thinking, like, you know, Wednesday or a couple days yesterday when it said that Mike Patton had to tell Johnny about the new video, I thought that the concussion was just like his way of punishing him versus him just come out and saying, you know, I'm tired of the videos and I'm about to bench Johnny, because I thought he would have got fired if he would have told half of them, you know, I'm benching Johnny for the last game. I thought he'd have got fired like Chip Kelly did or something like that. But I didn't think, I'm not saying he's faking, like I said, I know he's ignorant to think that, but I just thought that was like a smokescreen because I'm not going to just suspend him for the video because that would seem petty at this point. And I'm just going to say it's a concussion, that way nobody would question, you know, the motive behind it.
Yeah, I don't, again, I don't think that's the case. He even, you know, I've gotten to talk to Mike Patton on the air and then also off the air, and this video didn't bother him at all. You know, he just wanted to talk to him about it, but it was never, even he said when they didn't know he was in the concussion protocol, he said it would in no way, shape, or form impact his ability to be the starting quarterback for the Cleveland Browns. So I don't think that is the case. Appreciate the call. All right. Interesting. Interesting. Hot takes. It's a hot take Thursday here on CBD. When we come back, we'll hear from the defensive coordinator of the Cleveland Browns, Jim O'Neill, as he addressed the media as he does every Thursday. That's when we come back on CBD.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Browns defensive coordinator Jim O'Neill.
All right, happy New Year. Hope everybody safe tonight. Enjoy the college football games tonight and tomorrow. Just looking back to last week, I love the way our guys finished. I thought we played really well in the second half. We had three guys that had exceptional performances: Kawan Williams, Nate Orchard, and Randy Starks. I thought it was one of our best games defending the run. They presented some challenging things for us with the zone read game and with what they've been able to do in their win streak. And I thought our guys did a great job shutting that down for the most part. Looking ahead to this week, obviously this is, if not the best, one of the best offenses in football. We got to have a great plan. We got to execute. I think our guys are excited about the challenge. And it's Steelers week, so the guys are excited about the rivalry. Questions?
What do you think your run defense doing was better last week? And you haven't had those big chunk yards so badly. Well, what's improved about that?
I think we're playing good team football on defense. Guys are getting their jobs done, keeping the ball in the lanes where we want it to go to, and we've done a better job tackling.
Asked, you know, about the coaching staff. He said it would be, I think, something like it would be hard to justify keeping the whole entire coaching staff intact. There will probably be changes. Do you head into this final game concerned at all about your own job security? And can you talk about the job that you feel that you've done this season?
I don't go into the game worried about my own job security. You know, if they want me here, I'll be here. I give it everything I have. If they don't, I'll go somewhere else, be successful, and give it everything I have. I mean, that's just who I am. I don't think about it, though, all that much, Mary. I would say 95% of my energy goes towards developing a game plan and trying to put guys in position to make plays. The other 5% of whatever I have left goes to my family, and I usually get yelled at by my wife when some of that 5% ends up being football. So that's just being honest. As far as the job we've done this year, you know, obviously I'm disappointed in the record because this is a win-or-lose. This is a win-or-lose business. I do think as a coaching staff, we have over the past 2 years built a strong foundation. I do think we've done a good job developing young players. We talked about when we first got here about building a consistent winner. That doesn't happen overnight. You're going to have setbacks. And I think that as a staff, we've done a damn good job of that. So I'm proud of some of the situations we've had to deal with as a coaching staff, especially defensively. This year and some of the adversity that we've battled through. I thought we put together great game plans every week. I'm not happy with where we are from a win-loss record, but I'm proud of the job we've done.
What would you say when you look at your defense and you do look at the numbers, where did it go wrong?
I don't – you guys look at the numbers a lot more than I do. I care about winning and losing. And that's – I do. You know, I think here's what I know, Mary, and this is the truth. When offensive coordinators call you on Monday after a game and people who you respect around in this league call you and compliment what you're doing defensively and they make it a point to grab you pregame and pay you compliments, that's not BS. So we're on the right track. You know, we're doing good things. We're building a good foundation. Whether it continues or not, that's not up to me. And I'm not going to worry about that because it's not going to help things.
Hey, Jim, Mike said that he's talked to Jimmy Haslam about the defensive system. And says he doesn't think a complete overhaul is necessary, but probably some tweaks based on how the league's changing.
Yeah.
Have you been able to identify what some of those tweaks would have to be moving forward?
Yeah, I think that we've come out of the bye. I think we've done a good job of, you know, like we said, we've eliminated some of the explosive runs that have gone against us. We've really had to adjust our scheme a lot as the year's gone on, given some of the injuries we've had at certain positions. Again, I think that the staff's done a great job with that. We're really not, at this point of the season, running the scheme that we thought we would be running when we took the job here or when we came into the year. We've really had to adapt a lot and change who we are as a defense. I do think as more of the college game creeps into the NFL, you're going to have to tweak some things and make sure you're adjusting as offenses adjust. That's just like every year. You know, every year in the NFL, there's a new formation, there's a new type of play that teams are going to run, whether it's tempo, then it's zone read. Now it's all these run pass options where it's a run play, but they're running passes downfield. So if you have a loaded box, they throw the ball. You know, officials are struggling to officiate when linemen are downfield right now. So that's something that the NFL needs to get figured out. But, you know, it's something new every, you know, three or four years ago it was the Wildcat. You know, so every year you got to make adjustments to scheme to keep up with times, just like the offense does. I mean, we're going to come up with new pressures and new coverages and different ways to attack them, and they have to adjust with new protections and new formations and stuff. So, yeah, it's a vicious cycle.
What do you want when he leaves here? What do you want to impact on Justin Gilbert to kind of get him to be a more regular contributor? Because there was a lot of optimism coming into the season after his off season last year, and it just – it hasn't worked out. What do you tell
Yeah, I do think he's better than what he was last year. I can't sit here. I was hoping he'd be further along by this point of the year. I was hoping that he would be a week in and week out contributor for us. I think that Justin's going to have to just really dedicate himself into the offseason and put it in his mind that he wants to be in every down corner in this league and he wants to be a dominant player. He has the skill set. He has everything he needs from an athletic and a body length, everything you want to be a great corner in this league. He's just got to want to do it.
Is it frustrating? I mean, can you put your finger on it, or is it frustrating when you see the body and the, like you said, the athleticism, and yet it's not registering?
Yeah. I don't get frustrated because of the body and the athleticism and all that, because there's a lot of freak athletes out there who can't make it in this league. I mean, it's more mental than it is physical. But, you know, Justin's a guy we felt good about, and I want all those guys in the defensive room to have success and to be great players and to go on and get a second and a third contract and have great careers. You know, I cheer for all those guys. But, you know, he's got to want it too. And he does. He does for the most part. But he's got to really invest himself and really want it this offseason if he wants to take a jump and become that player that you're talking about.
Jim, you probably know Mike better than anyone here. So how do you think he's handled everything that's been thrown at him, and how do you think he's carried himself in his first chance as a head coach?
I think he's done an unbelievable job. And I've worked for some great coaches in my years in this profession. If you ask me, in my two cents, stability is the answer. It's not cleaning the slate every couple years. I think Cleveland's been down that path. In my opinion, that's not the right way to go. Whether I'm here or not, or the offensive coordinator's here or not, or the whatever coach is here or not, Mike Pettine's the right guy for this organization, and Mike Pettine's the right guy for this city. No, good.
We saw Johnny run a lot Sunday effectively. And I know that's not your side of the ball, but we saw him run a lot, but he also came out with a concussion. In your opinion, can a true read option system work in the NFL, or does it simply put the quarterback in too much risk?
I think that I think it's good when you can mix it in. Now, I think that the teams that are having the most success with it are the teams that are doing those run-pass options like I was just talking about, where the quarterback's not taking hits and not being asked to run with the football. The more you run and as a quarterback and you try to make plays with the ball below your shoulder, you know, when it's tucked away and you're trying to gain yards, the more hits you're going to take. And there's only so many hits quarterbacks can take in this league before something's going to happen. No, and we haven't talked about any of that. Again, right now, all of our focus is on the Pittsburgh Steelers. I mean, this is as big as it gets for the Cleveland Browns. We're playing the Pittsburgh Steelers at home last game of the year. Our guys are all in. The coaching staff's all in. Again, I love doing what I do. I love coming to work, putting together a game plan, spending time with the players, seeing them go out and execute a game plan, and try to go get a win on Sunday. That'd be a hell of a way to end this season. It's been a frustrating season. It's been tough at times. But you want to talk about making a lot of things right. Let's go win this Sunday. Let's finish this thing the right way and gain some momentum into the offseason.
We don't usually talk to the coordinators after the last game. So we probably won't get to do this in a week. But who's going to win that belt for the year? Who's the leading candidates to win it?
Randy Starks is leading by one right now. There's about five or six guys that are nipping at his heels. We do have some added incentives this week where there's going to be certain techniques, if executed the proper way, will be worth two bones on their dog collar. So that'll juice it up a little bit this week.
Whoever gets the most bones gets the belt. Is that what you're saying?
That's correct. So that'll be awarded to whoever wins on Monday.
That was Browns defensive coordinator Jim O'Neill with his weekly press conference there, addressing the media in advance of the season finale against the Pittsburgh Steelers. Interesting comments there. I thought it was very interesting talking about, you know, he doesn't know the stats of the defense, and that, you know, what he's happier about more than anything is that other offensive coordinators and people around the league he respects are praising him for the job he's done.
Yeah, I find it hard to believe in today's world of analytics where there are numbers for everything. And the one thing that I draw back from my time in the defensive meeting room of every team that I played for, there is a board probably 4 feet by 7 feet, enough to fit 17 weeks worth of goals. And these goals, which are made up of numbers, of say there's a 16 points or less. Did you get your goal? Did you not? And you get a helmet or, you know, a lightning bolt, or did you not? 100 rushing yards or less. Did you get your lightning bolt or your Browns helmet or not? 200 passing or 225 passing yards or less. One or more turnovers. Three or more sacks. One intercept. Those are all, either you have them, which become numbers, or you don't. And I just can't imagine how your defense coordinator, who is the leader of men on the defense side of football team, can't walk into a meeting room and look up at that board, and it can't be decorated with many football helmets to know that it's just not good enough. That the numbers aren't in our favor, the wins and losses aren't in our favor, and the production from the players that make up that defense are nowhere close to what they probably thought that board would look like in August as it does right now.
Oh, certainly not. It's supposed to be a top three defense, and as you know and I know, when you go through the numbers and you look at everything for the Cleveland Browns, it is not. That has not been the case this year. This has not been a defense on the level of what the Browns certainly expected, and of course I think what everybody expected when you look at this Cleveland Browns football team headed into 2015, and certainly now as we get ready for the 2016 season. I mean, the Browns are they're giving up 27 points a game. They're scoring 17. They are producing 336 total yards per game. They're giving up, you know, well over 400. It's one of those situations where you look at it and you just say to yourself, things aren't adding up. And I thought that was just and it was an interesting kind of slice at it.
It was. And I guess when you have a coach that pays attention to the numbers and pays attention to that board and emphasizes that board, you as players follow their lead. And every day after you win or lose a game, you can go look at that board and see, did we give up X amount of points? Did we give up X amount of yards rushing? Did we give up about X amount of yards passing? Did we get turnover? If you meet your goals, it's very rare that if you don't fill up majority of those goals on that board, it's probably why you lost. And I just know that in my time, for the linebacker coaches, John Pagano, Greg Minuski, Wade Phillips, who brought reinvented a new board for us in a series of goals. If you walked up to them on any given day and you asked them, "Hey, coach, where do we rank in sacks in the National Football League? We're third right now, right behind the Chiefs and the Ravens. Hey, coach, where are we in total defense?" They would know exactly where they're at because their lifeline and their career in the National Football League is tied to where we rank.
Well, here's what the Browns do rank. 26th in total yards per game, 30th in yards per play, 32nd in rushing yards per game, 29th in rushing yards per attempt, 19th in passing net yards per game, 30th, though, in passing net yards per play. Passing percent had intercepted, 23rd, 22nd on sacks per pass play. First downs per game, they are 20th, 21st in third down efficiency, 27th in fourth down efficiency. And then that is basically you go down and down. Combined offensive and defensive rank. Points per game differential, 31st. Net yards per game differential, 27th. Not a pretty picture.
No, it's not.
From a number standpoint. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to move things around a little bit. We're going to hear from Joe Hayden. He addressed the media earlier today. We're going to hear from Joe Hayden. Then at 2:15, we are going to go ahead and hear from Dakiad, and we'll pick the games for Week 17 here in the National Football League. We've got the forecast and much, much more. Wrapping it up here on the final Cleveland Browns Daily. 1 hour to go. Final Cleveland Browns Daily of 2015.